Now, I can't prove this, but I'm convinced that at least 63% of all circumnavigations have come about because anchoring's so tricky. For the notion that somehow a safety pin on the end of a bracelet is going to secure several tons of bucking osmosis in place is utterly preposterous to me. Yet down on the south coast, where they sail on Perrier and do courses, they still cling to the misguided notion that anchoring is an option. That's because down there they have valet anchoring, whereby as soon as your anchor dips out of sight below the surface, a uniformed, wet-suited commissionaire dives with it to the bottom, buries it under a mound of rocks, and sits in attendance reading the racing post until the owners return. Then, when he senses a tug from an electric winch, or on smaller, cheaper boats, a wife, that's the signal to unhook the anchor, escort it to the surface, and give it a quick buff with a chamois leather. That's real, not simulated. The anchor emerges from the fizzy water, sparkling like jewellery, and sometimes, for an extra flourish, the anchor valet garnishes it with a slice of lemon, a sprig of parsley, and a Gucci loafer on the tip. It's all part of the service. Meanwhile, the boat owner, with absolutely no inkling of what's gone on below, is swelled with dangerous feelings of all-round capability. But it's not like that on the East Coast. I hate anchoring. If the dang thing doesn't drag, it's stuck fast, and when you eventually break it out, it comes up with a huge gob of stench-making primordial Essex clay attached to a Mark II Jaguar with no number plates and a sawn-off shooter in the boot. For garnish, there's an old boot on the tip, with a foot in it, with all the toe prints removed. It's embarrassing, and it's not the sort of mess you want on your boat, especially a Bijou Sailfish 18, where the warp and chain stow below the deck, right next to where your head lies when you go to sleep. Mind you, I've heard South Coasters even pay to have this kind of gloop spread all over their faces and other bits, primitive heathens that they are. We stopped using woad around here in the mid-90s. So, those are some of the reasons I usually anchor to a much bigger boat, or more precisely, lash myself to it, or onto a pontoon, or a rickety bit of staging, or a club racing mark, navigation buoy, or wind farm stanchion. Up the Thames off Queenborough, the wreck of the Montgomery is a handy and surprisingly little used hitching post. True, it's full of explosives, but it hasn't blown up yet, not once. But there's one place I'll draw the line. I never ever tie up to visiting South Coast yachts, that's spelt Y-O-T-S, by the way, with gold yacht club initials on the transom and a white ensign. That's asking for trouble. Before you know it, you'll be rampaging through an anchorage as the cravatted skipper blurts, G&T in hand.
I say, the land seems to be dragging, what? Go on, wifey, be an old fruit. Swim ashore and tell it to stop, would you?
Of course, sailfish folk, being among life's restless innovators, have made several improvements to anchoring technique and tackle that you won't read about in RYA course books. On the Norfolk Broads, they use mud anchors, or more precisely, mud weights. The main scientific principle, and I'll try to keep it simple, is that they sink. They're also generally moulded from very expensive heirloom pudding bowls that are only discovered missing during preparation for Christmas dinner. But nicking them is short-sighted, for if you leave it till after Christmas, you could simply recover the charred cannonball Christmas pudding from the bin, and you'd have, quite possibly, the ultimate mud weight. As a PBO practical project, there are a few more thrifty or practical. But practicality isn't everything. Sailfish innovator Bob Smith has improved on the tried and tested design by developing a mud weight that doesn't get muddy. For his second effort, the first involved a pudding bowl but his wife took it back, he filled an old bleach container with cement and on its first deployment it floated. That's because there was an air pocket in it. Still, he's not giving up, and he's even given it a name. Others call their anchors Bruce. Bob's first thought was to call his Bob's Floater, patent not applied for. But on reflection, he opted for Bob, because that's what it does. At least it's honest, because generally anchors are given names like Steadlast, Holdforth and Evertrust, when, more accurately, they should really be called Dragmaster, Throwaway, that's the disposable one, or the Costalot Deadlost, which does what it says. Sailfish folk have also developed their own time-honoured anchoring strategy, which we deploy at rallies all over the coast. What you need is Jackie and David McGuinness and their Sailfish 18 Nomad. When she's at anchor, Nomad's no wanderer. That's because she has an absolutely monstrous anchor that must have come from something only slightly larger than the Titanic. And that's not shifting. It was recently put to good effect on our East Coast rally where Jackie and David anchored off Stone Point in the Walton Backwaters. Once they got settled, the rest of the fleet rafted up to Nomad, broke out the Tupperware and thermos flasks, then let go, sailed off and left them to it. What with the combined pull of sundry sailfishes, Nomad's hook had by then worked its way down to the Earth's crust. An anchor like that commands respect, not least when Nomad eventually turned up back at Levington and every boat owner saluted them with a boat hook and a fender as Nomad motored by and parked in a spot that opened up as if by magic. That's what anchors are really good for.